straight up. Jeff, just so we're laughing, come here. Oh, me. What can you do? Oh, well. I'm telling you. They just cut stuff off your Facebook all the time. All right. We started last week looking at Abraham, and we covered one whole verse, really, last week. Amazing thing about Abraham is he's kind of the point of origin for Christians, Jews, and Muslims. They trace their story back to Abraham. And let me say this. There are countless ways that a person can interpret and approach scriptures. They mean so much. It's like pulling an onion. Peeling an onion, not pulling an onion. If you're pulling an onion, you're on the wrong tree. But, you know, I mean, sometimes we kind of get it set in our head, okay, this is that, and that's all it means. But scriptures are so, so deep. You know, you discover this, and then you come back and look at it again, because, guys, I'm going to tell you what, we've been through this Abraham story before, but we're going back. And each time that we go back, we see something new, a fresh view, a fresh light, a fresh revelation that we need in this season. So we began the story of Abraham. And you remember Abraham's story. Remember how it kind of overlaps. He's in Genesis 11. And he's in Genesis 12. He's the transition here between from the creation and the fall. You remember creation and the fall took us up to Genesis chapter 11. There's so many things there. You know, boy, I would like to say a thousand things. Sometimes people look at you like you got two heads or something. But I will say this, in Christianity, in most people's thinking, I'll say it this way, is very, very elementary. Very, very elementary. I'm talking when they think about the kingdom, when they think about God, when you think about heaven, earth, all of these things is very elementary. And I will tell you that I hope it's not that way here. I have challenged you guys from the get-go to think inside of the box, outside of the box, away from the box, above the box, under the box, around the box, and what's in the next box. Because, I mean, I want our experience of the Lord and knowing Him to be as full as it can possibly be. And the more it is, the more that you can get through the times that we go through. So, God in Genesis 11, with His call of Abraham and Genesis 12, God is revealing His redemptive purpose. How He's going to redeem His creation. You know, that's You know, if people understood, you know, most, again, here are most Christians, most people don't realize what a role they play in the creation story. I mean, all of us here, I'm going to tell you what, we wasn't born too early, we wasn't born too late. We're all in this together in this generation. It'll be a time when we pass the baton off to another generation. And it's needful, and you know, the kingdom going forth, you know, always praying that kingdom come, the kingdom going forth, the glory of God filling the whole earth, the little stone filling the whole earth, all of these things, and we just kind of think we have no participation in it. You know, most Christians, it's just, you know, heck with it, I don't want to be bothered, get me out of here. And you know, I was telling somebody the other day, they were talking about, you know, the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And you know how that's mostly interpreted? It's mostly interpreted as God knew you was going to sin ahead of time, so he provided a lamb in his infinite wisdom ahead of time. Well, that's one way to look at it. I'm not saying he didn't know you was going to mess up. I mean, that would be pretty stupid to think he didn't know. But what if that there was a bigger picture? So when I approach this person with a bigger picture, that maybe this is the economy that God has put in place. When I say the lamb slain, that's kind of a Hebrewism. But what is it really? That man would lay his life down for one another. Maybe he designed it this way. But what has happened? Selfishness has came in. Adam and Eve thought, well, I'll be God. Selfishness came in, self-centeredness came in, and now it's you lay your life down for me. What can I get from you? And the whole economy, you know, I've said this before, it's a blood economy. And what that really means is, because the life is what? In the blood, that we should be laying our lives down one for another. Paul would bring this about in a marriage when he would say, husbands, love your wives. How? In what manner? As Christ loved the church. And in what way did he love the church? And gave himself for it. The horrible thing is we live in a Western culture that is very self-centered and selfish. And on top of that, we don't want to be bothered. We don't want to be bothered. I was telling them the other day, I was trying to, you know, set some things up for a charity and for a foundation and some thing like this. So I've talked to other Christians, other pastors, other people in the community, and you know how much help I get? Oh, is that like, oh, that like okay? No, zero. Zero. Now, isn't it amazing? Because Christian people is like, hey, just leave me alone. I don't really want to get involved. I'm too busy. Ain't you glad? I mean, I think the Lord was pretty busy. I would say he's probably the busiest person ever. And still he laid his life down one. Because what is it? I mean, this is kind of some of the parable stuff we go through. I mean, you know, I'll just build bigger barns. That's kind of the American mentality, isn't it? And you think, well, I'm not one of them. Well, guys, I'm telling you what I am. You know what? I was thinking last night. I said, we leave here. I need to go to Walmart's and just buy some trash bags. Clean house. Maybe your house is all squared away. I know where my stuff is. It's cluttered in piles here or there. I just need to, you know, downsize. That was kind of what we looked at last week. But, you know, I mean, you know this. I don't know of any other country in the world that you can make a living at buying or renting storage buildings. You ever think about that? I mean, that's a big business because everywhere you go down the road, there's storage buildings. Why? Because we got too much junk. I mean, honestly, we got too much junk. But when you go and say, hey, I need your help, I'm too busy. We're too cluttered. And the guys, I'm speaking to all of us here, all of us. I go look, and I mean, thank God for, you know, I know the prosperity gospel, and I just think sometimes to myself, it's like, I'll be honest with you, when I want to get a shirt out of my closet, sometimes I have to wedge my hand in there and shove everything this way just to get it out. How many shirts can you wear, Daddy? You know, I mean, I just wonder, and I go put my stuff in a drawer, and I've got, you know, and one of my dressers is not really good. So when I'm shoving down, I'm like, hey, I got plenty of room. I didn't know I was shoving it down into the next drawer. You know, but you know what I'm talking about when I go to close the drawers and I got to take my fingers and punch down the socks and everything to get the drawer to close. Man, we got too much. That was kind of what we looked at last week. Remember, Abraham, before he could move on, had to leave some stuff behind. He had to leave some stuff behind. Now, let me go, baby, put up Genesis 12. And I'm going to read 1, 2, and 3. Because what I want us to look at this. Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I'll show you. And I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Now this is Abraham begins God's story of blessing all people. Now, guys, this is where many people hang out in the Christian church today. And I don't have a whole lot to say on it, but I do got to say a little bit on it. We've covered it before because anybody knows what happened last night? The Iranians attacking. But let's keep this in context. Who is the subject of this conversation right here? Man, y'all, I'm going to get y'all them signs. They just hold up. You know, you can write on a whiteboard and just hold up. That way, if you mess up, whoosh, rub it out, flip it around. Abram, right? God is talking to Abram. He's not talking to Israel. He's talking to Abram. Now, we kind of know prophetically where it's going, but Israel's not going to be for another two generations because Abraham's going to have Isaac. Isaac's going to have Jacob, and Jacob is going to have his name changed to Israel. But most people, if you want to sell Blood Moon books, it's got to hang out right here, right? Saying, bless Israel. I want to tell you what, one of the things he said, I will bless all nations. Did he say that? Did we not just read that? Let me ask you, is Iran part of the nations of all nations? So, you know, we as Christians should not be praying for God to blow up all peoples around the world. We should be praying and participating in blessing all peoples everywhere. We got nothing else to do. I mean, really, this is the story, isn't it? And we have been privileged to be a part of that story. So now, prophetically, we know this text is not speaking to the nation of Israel in the Middle East. This text is speaking of Christ, right? It's speaking of Christ. Now look, put up verse 2, baby. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great. Whose name is great? Who has a name that is above every name? Israel? Are you sure? Are you sure it doesn't say I'm going to make Israel's name above every name? At the name of Jesus Christ, for God has highly exalted him. So just in that one verse right there, you know, I would think the Blood Moon people could be able to see this is not talking about the Middle East. This is talking about Jesus. And plus, if you've ever happened through this little book called Galatians, where Paul writes specifically, not seeds as of many, but seeds as of one, even Christ, is pretty plain. And I will add this to it. That God, some people kind of have this, that God replaced Israel with the church. That's wrong. Do you know what replace means? Replace would mean I've got to get rid of one and put another one in its place. And I can tell you, God didn't get rid of anybody. He grafted us in. He didn't exclude anybody. He brought us all in. You see, what I mean, the goodness of God, the graciousness of God is wow sometimes. It's awesome. It's wow. How can this be? But Abraham begins God's story of blessing all peoples. He begins the story that culminates, finds its fulfillment in Jesus. It's a story of God bringing healing and hope and renewal to all things. I know, guys, and I didn't realize how much sometimes Paul used this statement one time. He's talking to these brothers. He said, I perceive you're too superstitious. And we always, and we don't realize how much mythology, how much Harry Potter magic is kind of in our doctrines, because we just kind of believe that God walks on you, sprinkles magic dust on you, and then all of a sudden you start shaking, and then all of a sudden you say prophetic words, and now everything is great. You know, at some point in time, God comes to you and says, William, you need to mow the grass. And you better mow it, because, you know, yeah, you know. But you know what? We are participating in God's work, even in doing that. We think it's slowly and God's not there, but Christ is in you. So now mowing the grass becomes God's work and his creation. Because, hey, you come up to a piece of ground that's just full of briars and thorns and thistles, and you clear it out and you bring beauty where there was once chaos and thorns. And guys, we miss the fact that that's part of the renewal of God's planet, of God's story, and we're participating in it. And but people just ride around, hey, I'm done with this pop, throw it out, right? I'm done with this bag of trash, throw it out. I'm telling you, every time, you know, last week we had these rains come, I could probably pay this church building off going up through the, I don't even have to go through the ditches. Ditches, just go in the road and get all the cans out of the road that washed out of the ditch. It's amazing. But see, and guys, this is the mentality of America. I'm out of here. I have no, you know, it doesn't matter if we wreck the planet. It doesn't matter if we just tear up and whatever. I'm out of here. Heck with it. God hates it all. No, God made it all. God said it was all very good, and we fell and messed it up, and now you and me get to participate in bringing God's blessing to everything. I'm telling you, I know it's crazy sounding, but I don't even believe we should mistreat animals. Y'all with me? I mean, honestly, I know that we go hunting, but there is something to that of keeping the herds at the right level, because if you've been going down the road and hit a deer and hit two or three or four or five, and they get overpopulated, so there is. And there is a system to the whole thing. And when it's all out of whack, then you got bears coming on your porch, don't you? You know, I mean, you would have thought a long time ago, you'd go your whole life and never see a bear. And now I see one at the high school to Richlands crossing the road. And I'm thinking, tardy. It'll get to class, buddy. So we get to participate in this. But this is the beginning of the story. So last week, just a little recap, we talked about two major pieces in the setup to the story. Abraham begins in a place of waiting. Remember, into chapter 11, he's waiting. It tells us that Abram and his dad and his family had always intended to go to the land of Canaan, but they got stuck in this little podunk town called Haran. Wasn't that a music group, Haran, Haran? See, I just told how old y'all was. because, yeah, Kayla, she didn't say a word. She didn't know, but the rest of y'all were laughing and like, oh, yeah, so y'all are old. Y'all are old. So y'all remember that now. That's where Abraham was at Haran, Haran. They got stuck there in this land called Haran, and they got comfortable there, and they settled down. They got stuck, okay? They got stuck. Now, again, this is probably not an unfamiliar story to most of us. And when I say that, I'm not talking biblically. I'm talking in our life because we started out with big plans. We all did. Big ambitions, a clear goal, an idea where we wanted to go. Then somehow we stopped for a while. Things happened. Here we are. We settled down. And guys, that's not always bad. Sometimes it's actually really good because sometimes the waiting and the wondering and the dreaming about what next prepares us to hear well. Because I'm telling you, I know there are people who have heard from God. I know God speaks, but we don't always hear well. You know that old thing when, you know, Christy tells you to do something and you say, well, I thought you said. No, that's not what I said. So it prepares us to hear well. But Abraham ends up in this intended place for longer than he intended to be. His dad passes away, and he's left without a lot of clear direction for what comes next. And this is the place where God speaks to him. And God says, leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's household, and go to the land that I will show you. You know, all of these things, guys, are symbolic. Symbolic doesn't mean that you take the literal meaning away. I'm sure there was a literal man named Abraham, and he was walking through with literal sandals on his feet, going to a literal land of Canaan. I'm not doubting that. But it has application to you and me today. It's like we had talked about the land. What is the land? What does the land represent? Because surely if the land was really the land and it wasn't symbolic or metaphoric in some sense, then all of us need to take a pilgrimage and go to the Middle East or we're missing out on our blessings. But I have no desire to go over there. We spent last week talking about the yes and the no of life. You know, with a good yes comes a good no. When you say yes to your wife, you're saying no to every other potential relationship that you would ever be involved in. You know, a good yes has to be accompanied by a good no. That you can't go somewhere new, even if God calls you to it, until you're ready to leave somewhere old. You can't go. You can't go somewhere new until you're ready to leave where you are. It's just how it works. It's just how it works. John Calvin, he said it this way, and yes, I do read other people's work as much as I can. John Calvin says that Abraham and Sarah are called to go with closed eyes, for having left their country, they could not have given themselves fully to God's. They had to go with closed eyes. They couldn't leave until, or they couldn't not have given themselves fully to God's, until they had left what was behind. You know, Paul kind of makes the same statement, forgetting those things that are behind, doesn't he? Pressing on. And this is important because sometimes what you move on from is actually good. You know? I mean, If we would go and just look at scriptures for a little bit, is the law bad? Paul said it wasn't bad. Paul said the law is good. It's just. It's holy. Was the tabernacle bad? I mean, was the whole system God gave them on Mount Sinai, was it a bad system? No, it wasn't a bad system, but he was calling them on, as the Hebrew writer would say, to something better. So sometimes where you're at is good. Nothing wrong with it at all. But he wants to bring us into the better. So then the system is not bad. It's not broken. It's not wrong. It's just not what God has for you in this season. Could be, you know, naturally so. Could be a physical move to a new place like Abraham. It could be a career change that William and Emma's going through. It can even be as simple as the yeses and noes of stuff. I need to get rid of some stuff. You know, it's really simple. I know I'm not picking on William today, but, you know, there's a time when your freezer is full of deer meat, right? And there's a time when you got to eat it up, or you can't go hunting. You got to give it away. You got to make room for the new. So something's got to go. So it's getting rid of the old to make room for the new. It's just the way it is, guys. There's no, you know, the system of I'll just build bigger barns. That's kind of the system that we've been working under, but that's the wrong system. We got to. Now, we spent all last week on that because a lot of time our relationship to stuff in our culture is just a symptom of how we approach life. We want more and more and more and more all the time. We gather it up like hoarders. You remember those famous three words I gave you last week? The most dangerous three words in American people's mindset, just in case. I know the handle is broke on that rake. But just in case a short guy comes by and wants to help rake the yard, you know, I mean, just in case. We have this crippling sense of a FOMO. Have you guys ever heard of FOMO? F-O-M-O. I learned this in crypto. FOMO, it's the fear of missing out. Fear of missing out. Oh, my God. I mean, teenager, oh, man, we got to try everything, you know. Fear of missing out. That approach ends up leading to a life where we never take any new opportunities if they ask us to, because we never leave something behind. Because it's just too scary if we do that. We end up missing out most of our lives. Nobody wants to miss out on anything. We want to try it all. You know, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, would you like a Coke? Then you can, that's a pretty easy decision. But if they come to you and say, well, we've got 97 flavors of Coke. Which one do you want? You know, I seen a lady the other day with a kid. And you know, here's the thing. You can have one toy. You ever do this? You ever take your kids to the store and you say you can have one toy? That's a mistake. That's a mistake. You might as well just plan on living there at the store, because that decision is going to change. It's, you know, it's too much. I'm FOMO. I might miss out. I know this toy looks great, but this toy looks good too. And then that toy looks good. And then this toy looks good. Can I just have two? If I have two, I'll never ask another thing. And, you know, that we kind of have that in our life, the fear of missing out. We don't learn to leave some things behind, leave some things on the shelf. If you don't learn that, then you're never experiencing what God has for you in particular, because there are some things that he wants for us, but we got to leave some things behind. So I don't think it's insignificant that the first thing God says to Abraham when he calls him is, leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's house, leave what is familiar, because I've got something new and beautiful in mind for you. There are times that we need to leave things behind and move towards the new. Now, guys, that was last week. This week, I want to talk about the difference between direction and directions. because we get caught right here in this. I started to bring a cake box, you know, to make a cake out of. Because you know what's on there? Directions. It tells you exactly how to do it, don't it? I buy these little meals I cook my supper with, and it'll tell me, pull the plastic back. Preheat the oven, or, you know, microwave on 1100-watt microwave for 5 minutes. Stir, then heat again for 1 minute. Caution, contents will be hot. So the, you know, directions and direction. So we left off with Abraham having been called by God to leave his country, go somewhere new. We've already read those verses, 2 and 3 there, where God makes a promise to Abram. And he says he's going to bless him. He's going to bless his descendants, and they're going to become a great nation. But the reason for that blessing, God says, is that Abraham will become a blessing. Abraham will become a blessing. People go to church today to get a blessing, and we miss it. I'm going to make you the blessing. Wow. That takes some maturity right there. Again, we know the story. We've heard it many times, very familiar, but it's a good reminder that all blessing comes with responsibility. Boy, that's the thing we don't like, isn't it? Responsibility. This is the thing that used to kill us where we would go, because it was like, I have no responsibility. I'm carnal-minded, so I can say what I want. I'm in the carnal mind, and it doesn't matter. I'm not responsible. That's hogwash. We're responsible. At the same time, you and me, we forget sometimes, we don't need to feel guilty about being born in the USA and all the advantages that come along with that, because we are greatly blessed just for the privilege of being born here. I know we talk about the border. They're trying to get here. Guys, we were born here. You're a citizen and you did nothing. We threw more groceries away this week, a wasted food. We could have probably fed 100 families. But that's where we are. But now, we don't need to feel guilty about that. But we do need to feel the weight of responsibility to turn that into blessing and good news for others, because that's just how it works. That's just how it works. And here's why guilt is not a good motivator. Listen, hear me well. Guilt is never a good motivator. Because when guilt makes you do something, even if you do something good, then it's fundamentally a selfish thing. You feel guilty. You don't like feeling guilty. You don't like feeling this way. So you do something that makes you feel better for a time. That's not what God is looking for in this story. God doesn't bless Abraham in order to make him feel guilty. I heard a guy talking this morning, and, you know, we've been doing this because we finished up. It'll be out this week. We did our YouTube on the ashes of the red heifer because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with the red heifer. And basically, kind of bringing it down real small, the ashes of a red heifer wasn't for sin. The ashes of a red heifer was laid up in a clean place in case you touched a dead body or a dead bone. Then you could go. It was outside of the camp. Then a provision was laid up. For one, that provision is always there for you. And in the book of Hebrews, it had to do with purging you of an evil conscience from dead works. So it had to do with the consciousness. And I heard this guy, he was talking about it, and he says, man, you got to let your conscience be your guide. Your conscience will always tell you, guys, the consciousness is not your guide. Your consciousness will always lead you down the wrong road. What happened when you have a guilty conscience? Here is Adam and Eve in the garden when they have a conscience. Did their consciousness lead them to God? No. Their consciousness called them to run and hide. That's what the ashes of a red heifer are. For the purifying of the conscience. Okay. So you kind of get what all that stuff is about. That provision is still laid up. And I can tell you this. How do we apply that provision nowadays? Then they would go and the priest would take the ashes, put them in running water, sprinkle hyssop on them, and they would be clean. How do we do that today? Well, I'm going to tell you. Big secret, but I'm letting you guys know, we need to spend time in the presence of the Lord. If you think the Lord's up there, then you better get you a spaceship and try to get up there. But if you realize that the Lord is with you and you're with Him and you need to spend some time in His presence, then He applies the ashes of the sprinkling of the water of separation. Anyway, again, this is not about making you feel guilty. Blessing is blessing because it's about what you get to do with it, right? That's the fun part of it. That's the joy of it. You get to do this with it. It's why, guys, when we built this church, we put the offering box out back. Because I didn't want this church built on the guilt, that uncomfortable moment when the plate comes in front of you, and they're looking at you like, I saw you put a button in there. I saw it. Now, yes, we need money to stay afloat. We've had this conversation many times. It's always there. But I wanted this to be, about the excitement and joyful part of your worship if you decided to participate that way. It's not about, this ain't a money sermon. But, you know, for me, I mean, there is joy in giving, you know. I mean, there really is. I know many of you have gave so much, and there's just, you know, something there. That's what God is calling Abram to. I will bless you, and you will get to bless the world. I will make you a great nation and bless you and all the peoples on the earth everywhere will be blessed through you. You get to be a part of this, Abram. So now let me read verses 4 through 9. I'm going to read this out of the NIV. If you could put it up on the board in the King James, but I just want to kind of get a little bit of this in a little different language. So, verse 4. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with Abram. Abram was 75 years old when he went out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions they had accumulated. Important, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. They arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. See, I wanted to put that up because that's really in the Hebrew text, but it's not in the King James. At the time the Canaanites were in the land, so there was other people there. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he went on towards the hills east of Bethel, pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. See, y'all thought Ai was a new thing. It says Ai right there, but it's Ai, really. See, Ai's been around a long time. Everybody's all worried about it. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Verse 9, then Abraham set out and continued towards the Negev. It says to the south in the King James. Thomas Cahill writes in his book, The Gift of the Jews, Abraham went. King James says he departed. He says Abraham went are two of the boldest words in all of literature. They signal a complete departure from everything that has gone before. Out of ancient humanity, which knows in its bones that all striving must end in death, comes a leader who says he's been given an impossible dream, a dream of something new, something better, something yet to happen, something in the future. In every other ancient society, probably not so ancient, Abraham would have been given the same advice. Do not journey, but sit tight. Compose yourself by the river of life. Meditate on its ceaseless and meaningless flow. But Abraham went. That's a big thing, guys. It's big. The realization that Cahill's making here is that this is more than a move from one town to another. This is a significant investment in belief in the future that Abraham is showing here. You remember I talked to you early about transforming, you know, changing our world, changing our culture, you know. We've talked about all this stuff before. People don't really believe that. They really don't. They think we're insignificant. So I want you to get the weight of this, and Abraham went. This is still to us today. I will make you a blessing. We're here, co-laborers with God to bring the blessing of God to the world. And that blessing is none other than Jesus Christ, but we think it's too big. Let's just hide out in our Haran, and let's just stay there, and one of these days... You know, so this is hopefully why we come together, so that we can encourage one another. Hey, there is a dream out there. I put a magazine up on my wall in the office over there of Martin Luther King. I love it. Martin Luther King is right beside a General Douglas MacArthur when Martin Luther King was shot. Everybody knows what he preached. I have a dream. I believe a God-given dream he had, too. I believe that. I believe it's the same dream that Abraham had, that God had given to him. When we couple all that with a narrative that we just read, where Abraham basically shows up in Canaan as God told him to, and then just starts wandering around checking out the place... See, that's what I said before. There's a difference between direction and directions. We'll come back to that. Now, if the geographical notes in Genesis are to be taken literally, and there's totally no reason not to, the Bethel, the Shechem would have been up in the northern part of the land. You know, we read the great tree, Marah. No idea what that was, maybe a big old tree. But Shechem was an ancient city that we actually know a lot about from our manna tablets. These were clay tablets written in ancient language called Akkadian. And the leaders of Shechem are negotiating with the rulers of an Egyptian city called Amarna. These tablets are over 3,000 years old, and they confirm a lot of what we understand about the Bible. They actually give us a lot of insight into some of these pre-Abrahamic communities. But this, right here in this verse, towards the Negev, towards the south, this is the large desert area in what is now called southern Israel. So what this, you know, it's kind of a travel log here. You know what I mean? We stopped here. Oh, this little diary, so to speak. Abraham, it shows us that Abraham was called to go to Canaan. But that doesn't mean that God has laid out every step along the way. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Walter Brueggemann says the particular references are to be understood not only as historical or geographical notes, but as a theological program. The life of faith is the one which keeps Israel in pursuit of the promise. Abraham was not one who finally arrives at his destination. He trusts the promise. And this is what I'm talking about, the difference between direction and directions. I think a lot of the time when we say things like, I wish I would hear from God. Or we read a story like Abraham, we say, I wish God would speak to me the way he spoke to Abraham. You know, we think these things. And what I think what we really mean is not so much that we want direction to head in like Abraham as much as we want directions about how to get where it is we already want to go. You know, those directions on the cake box. Brueggemann says that Abraham's journey is a challenge to settlement, a challenge to security, a challenge to placement. And I think those are the things that we're exactly looking for when we want God to speak to us. We want him to make it secure for me, make it settled, make my place secure. Tell me every little detail. Tell me exactly where to go. I want you to go 4 steps this way. Stop, 1 step to the left. Okay, good, I've arrived at my destination. I mean, we want this, right? Tell me what to do once I get there. Tell me it's all going to be okay. That's what we want to hear from God. Now, don't get me wrong. Abraham gets some of that. God says, this journey is for your good. You'll be blessed, and I'll be with you along the way. But the directions, the specifics, the details that would make all of that would have taken Abraham right out of the story. The details would have left, it would have relieved Abraham from making any decisions, any choices along the way. That's just not there in the text. Abraham, go to Canaan. What do I do when I get there? I don't know if you'll figure it out. I'm telling you, you know, this is a lot of the way we think. You know, God is going to send us a text message with detailed information or send us an email, you know, step one, step two, step three, you know. I remember this guy used to tell me one time, he said, you know how I read the Bible, Brother Jimmy? I said, I don't know. He said, I just drop it where the page it wants to. That's what God wants me to read. I said, well, that's one way. That's a way, I guess, you know. Again, I would say, maybe you're a little too superstitious. Listen, guys, I don't know about you, but I'll just throw this out there. I know as we encounter situations in life, I know every situation we will ever encounter is in the Scriptures. So I will go and look and see, hey, I remember so-and-so was in this situation. What did they do? What did they pray? How did God deal with them? I'm telling you, all week last week, almost shut everything down, and I was thinking about Greg and his wife and the family and all of that stuff. I'm looking in the Bible. I know you're not supposed to. Well, you're going to come before great men, and God will give it to you. Well, sometimes that happens, but for the most part, we need to study to show thyself approved. We need to do so. I'm like, God, give me something. I don't know. Give me something. I'm looking. Give me something. Friday night. Why does God always wait? Why couldn't he do it Tuesday? I wouldn't have had to sweat near as bad and, you know, all this stuff. Friday night. I'm looking. I mean, it's late Friday night. I'm looking. And I'll be honest with you, I was tired. Because I had went out, we did our thing on Thursday. I got home at 8:30 at night. Okay, so I get home, I'm sitting on my bed, and I'm taking my shoes off and a railroad calls. So I go back to work. So no big deal. So I get home, and I'm thinking, okay, we have this hours of service. I got 2 hours left. 5:30, they call me again. So I'm thinking, hey, this will be cool. I can go back to work, and then I'll be off all day. So I go to work, it's, you know, it's raining and all this, and really I didn't do nothing. I go in, I report, yep, the rocks fell down, they're blocking the track. Call the people so they come, I go home, I think I'm going to get some sleep. Everybody in Tazewell County wanted to call me. I called Gary, my cousin, the other day, and I kept calling and calling, and I said, man, I couldn't get a hold of you. He said, I had the phone off. I said, how am I supposed to disturb you if you have your phone off? He said, that's why I turned it off. Maybe you should do the same. I don't like him. I said to Tracy, said, why don't you turn your phone off? Well, maybe I should have, because, you know, every time you're about to go to La La Land. So I was tired. But then, you know, you're wondering, okay, I might as well just get up. I'm never going to get any sleep. So you're wondering, what am I going to say? And you know, the Lord just took me right to the road to Emmaus. Jesus drew near. Pow, there it is. And everything just kind of built off of that. But, you know, we want these directions. Tell me step by step. Tell me everything. And we just kind of think Jesus was a robot. We get that picture. The words that I say, they are not my words. They are the words of my master. Right? The things that I do is not what I do, but what I see the Father do. I'm not here to smile. I'm not here to have joy. I'm just here to do the Father's will. You know, robotic. So we kind of think, oh, wait, we come into the church and we get up in the stand. And then, you know, that's, I used to hear them old people say, boy, I love it when the Lord preaches me. Well, I guess he winds you up. You know, the little knob back there in the back, and he sets you off, and then you start preaching. It doesn't work that way, guys. I'm just telling you, it doesn't work that way. Go to Canaan. You'll figure it out. God says, here's the direction. Go that way. But when Abraham gets to Canaan, he's got to look around. He's got to decide where he wants to settle. He's got to figure out how he wants to relate to the people who are already in that land. I mean, this is a story about faith. But it's not a story that removes Abraham from the place of making real, meaningful, sometimes hard decisions about life. It doesn't really matter what you think you're called to or what it is that you do for a living. There are still all kinds of choices you have to make for yourself. And they're hard and they're scary. Trust me, guys, I have been in all kinds of different situations, you know, coming out of high school, going into the Marine Corps, and then working on a railroad for 33 years. I'm telling you what, there are some people that I've worked with that will not do one thing unless you tell them. When I say one thing, I mean grab the nail. Grab the hammer. Insert nail on board. Strike, hammer. Have you ever been around people like that? And then, if you don't say that, here they are. Well, you didn't tell me to hit it. Now, those people kind of drive you crazy, but we bring that over into the church. And it's like, well, my gosh, God didn't tell me. He didn't tell me. If God wanted me to go to church this morning, he'd have told me. He would. I'd been going to somewhere, and, you know, I'd have got a text, go to church. I mean, do you know that when you plant a church, I would like to think that we planted this church. I'm thankful for that you and I have got to participate in this thing that I'm thinking is growing and growing and growing. And I'm telling you, I was watching the other day, and I just kind of sharing this with you, because normally the videos get, I know, poof, wah, wah, see the Holy Ghost get on me. Did you see that? Cat-like reflexes. Yeah. Y'all didn't know that I went to ninja training school, did you? Yeah. If it had landed on me, I'd have just fell out in the spirit. That'd have been it. Did you see that thing up here, Jeff? Is that what you was trying to warm me up? I thought Jeff was getting happy. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I don't know where he went. He went on Jeff's side. Yeah. My goodness. What are we talking about? Abraham. Yeah, Abraham. Yeah. But anyway, guys, you know, when when you plan a church, God doesn't tell you what color the curtains has got to be, what color the, you know, how to do it. He didn't tell you this stuff. You just do it. I mean, sometimes God speaks specifics, but sometimes there's still things that need to be decided by our own wisdom. That doesn't diminish faith. That doesn't diminish it at all. It makes it a relationship. That's what it's about. Because as I learn to listen and hear and to trust God when He speaks, I begin to recognize that He also trusts me. He trusts me to respond, to move, to make decisions in light of the relationship that we're building with Him. I know He speaks clearly, definitively, specifically to some people at some times, but for the vast majority of us, I think God says, this is out of bounds, this is out of bounds, but you've got all this room in the middle. Learn, explore, give, forgive, bless the world with everything I've trusted you with. Having a direction in life is not the same thing as having every step laid out for you. It's not directions. In fact, having a direction in life, really and truly having direction you know you're supposed to go, this will require more hard decisions, more choices, more investment. This is what makes Christianity so different from all the other religious traditions. There are really no rules for this. There's the out of bounds. Don't murder, don't steal, don't abuse each other. But the details of exactly how to live out, how to live it out, actually means to be a Christian. When to pray, when to eat, when what to dress. There's none of that there. These are choices that you have to make. There's an old story about a young man who came to see this famous rabbi who was well known before the time of Jesus. And the young man said to the rabbi, Shammai, if you can explain the Torah to me while I stand on one foot, I'll convert here on the spot. And Rabbi Shammai replied, that's ridiculous. Torah is law. Not one single word can ever be reduced. And he chased the young man off, throwing rocks at him. Well, Jesus is presented basically with the same kind of question, minus the theatrics. And what does he say? He quotes from Deuteronomy 4. He quotes from Deuteronomy 19. He says, love God, love people. That's it. There's no law greater than these. That's right. That right there is the difference between direction, head this way, and directions. Tell me what to do. Tell me every step. Now, unfortunately, at times that means that even when you're on a mission from God, even when you're heading in the right direction, you still get it wrong. Let me read these verses here real quick. So if you want to see what I'm talking about, verse 10. There was famine in the land, and Abraham went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass when he's come near to Egypt that he said unto to Sarai, his wife, behold now, I know thou art fair woman to look upon. I mean, she was really pretty. Therefore, it shall come to pass when the Egyptians see thee, they shall say, this is his wife. They will kill me, and they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. It came to pass that when Abram was coming to Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman that was very fair. The princesses, also Pharaoh, saw her, commended her before Pharaoh. The woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. He entreated Abram well for her sake. And he had he had sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai's Abraham's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this that you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why dost thou say she's my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now, therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him. They sent him away, him and his wife and all that he had. First, Abraham should have known this was a horrible idea. He should need directions from God telling him, don't do this. You don't misrepresent yourself. You certainly don't misrepresent the people who trust you. You don't put someone else in a bad spot just to protect your own neck. So Abraham here is at his worst, isn't it? He's selfish, self-serving, devious. He shouldn't need directions to tell him to stop. But if you look at the story, God says, go to the land, I'll show you. He doesn't tell him what to do. When he gets there, a famine hits, food gets scarce. He doesn't tell him what to do when he meets Pharaoh. He's afraid of him. God expects Abram to make the right decisions. God calls Abram to make good, honest, trustworthy decisions based on the relationship he's been developing. That's what this story's all about. Now, you can argue that God is in the background here protecting Abram and looking out for him, making sure things turn out good. And I mean, that's true. But I don't think for a second that this story is any kind of endorsement from God. In fact, the way that the story is written, it seems to be foreshadowing the Jews going down in Egypt at the end of Genesis and ending up slaves in the book of Exodus. And you know, anybody that reads these stories, everybody knows that Pharaoh's a bad guy in the bigger story. You're supposed to read this story and think, oh my goodness, Abram, how can you be so dull? How can you be so dumb? I mean, you're telling me Pharaoh has got better morals than you? And if you read the story closely, God doesn't need to tell Pharaoh that adultery is wrong and you shouldn't pass your wife off as your sister. He doesn't need directions. Then why on earth does Abraham need them? And also we should notice Abraham's told to go to Canaan. When he gets there, there's a famine. This is one of the things when I see this bigger picture, when God blesses you, when you have a blessing, where do you think he's going to send you? God blessed me, sent me to Hawaii. I question. I've watched this in the pastoral things. Oh, God has really blessed me. And I know this pastor, he's praying. He pastored this a pretty good sized church, and then all of a sudden now the Lord is blessing him to go to a bigger church. Now the Lord is blessing him to go to a bigger church. Now the Lord is blessing him to go to the biggest church around. And I say, really, I think the Lord might have sent you to that church over there on Jewel Ridge that had 4 people that ain't had a pastor in 4 years. You see what I mean? We like the other story. Not the one that requires, but the one where I get. But when we read this, we should notice Abraham is told to go. He gets there. There's a famine. He goes to Egypt, passes his wife off at his sister, completely misses the mark, and yet somehow ends up with all kinds of sheep and donkeys and cattle and slave. For him, it's like hitting a lottery. Can I suggest here, just because things are hard doesn't necessarily mean you're in the wrong place. Sometimes the right place is the hard place where it feels like famine. That's where God had called Abraham to go. On the flip side, is that just because things turned out well in the end doesn't necessarily mean God is pleased with how you got there. Now, God is gracious, God is forgiving, God welcomes us back every single time, but if we start to assume that the ends justify the means, that our privilege, however we got it, whoever we took it from, is somehow God's will for us, then we've missed the story. Jeff, I got about 5 minutes, buddy. God means to bless Abram. He told him that. But mistreating his wife, misrepresenting himself, this is not how God wanted to do it. We'll start to see this more and more as this story develops, as we work our way through it. Abraham at this juncture is not in tune with God. I don't know, you know, sometimes we got to tune our instruments if we want to play together, make sure we're all on the right tune, you know, playing in the right key. Abraham is out of tune. But slowly he becomes more and more in tune with God, who speaks to him. I can tell you right now, when I'm talking about this in tune, again, a husband-wife relationship is a great way to do it. I could promise you, even now, Tracy and I could go out to eat, and she could say, I got to go to the restroom, order for me, and I could get her order right. All I have to do is order chicken. I'm going to be right, ain't I, baby? Huh? It's going to be a long day. Long day. Yeah. But you know what I mean? I mean, but there's a time when you don't know that. You're out of tune, right? But as you become more in tune, now I want you to know this Jesus wasn't a robot. He knew the Father. So there are times when William could answer for Christy because he knows what she's going to say in this situation. So there are times when Jesus can say something because he knows the Father and he's not waiting, oh, Lord, I don't know what to say in this. Father, you got to tell me. Oh, yeah, God said. No, because there's a relationship there. Right? That's what we're talking about. So slowly he becomes more and more willing to give things away, to put his own self at risk. And yes, he continues to make mistakes. In fact, he's going to make the same mistake with his wife again here later in the story. I wonder how that conversation is going the second time. But slowly, as we watch Abraham grow, we watch him mature, he becomes the kind of person that's worthy of a calling, worthy of being given a direction to head. Someone who doesn't need to be given directions by God at every step. Because his faith becomes mature enough to work in concert with God. So maybe you've been praying for direction in your life. But maybe in the back of your mind, what you've really been looking for is God to lay it all out for you step by step. That'd be easy, wouldn't it, William? I know William is going through the very things right now. It'd be easy if you got an email from God, wouldn't it? Steps one, step two, step three, step four. Hey, blessing, go. Don't work that way, though. Doesn't work that way. If that was the case, then I would take no responsibility. I wouldn't even have any part in the story, really. I wouldn't have no pressure, no responsibility. That's not how it works, because mature faith is you and God in concert together. If you are faithful, you will still need to make good choices. Because you know what? William, and I'm kind of promoting William here in his new carpentry business here. Plug. I need some work done, so I'm looking for a discount. So I'm like, remember, William? No, but even in this, we think it's all separate. But if William decides, you know what, I've started my own business. I'm going to be in the carpentry business. But you know what, I'm not going to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, but on Fridays I'm really going to get after it. I can say that either Christy's going to have to kick him or his business will go under. So he's going to have to make good choices. Now, these are God choices, and in concert with, in faith with God, even in that, because God is involved. Because through that, God can use all of this to be a blessing for others. Because it's not church on Sunday. Everything is involved. Everything. When you had to leave your job and go out, I'm looking at Denise, and go out and do your things. It's scary, and you didn't get an email from God either. You had to take, we call it this, leap of faith. But when you know God, you can. Maybe you've been praying for direction in your life, but the truth is, if you're really honest about things, you already know where to head and what to do. You know where God is calling you to. You know the choices that you need to make, but you're scared to take the first step because you don't know exactly what the next step will be. That's okay too. It's okay to be scared. But again, mature faith, it's about you and God in concert. It's about trusting that if God has given you the right direction to head, and when you take that first step, that you'll be mature enough to take the next step. Remember, Abraham went. Those are two of the boldest words in all literature. I'll repeat this again. Because you've been given an impossible dream. A dream of something better, a dream of something new. And maybe in that, may you sense the Spirit's direction for your life today. I'll quit with that.